Hey, everybody. Welcome to another week of the Soccer Thread Podcast. I'm Dan Schrader. I'm in Portland, Oregon. You know, we like to give little updates on life sometimes, so I'm going to pretend I'm Mike.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Drank some port this week and saw some chickens in the road and sent a picture of those to all my friends.
Lots of
I'm
chickens.
Mike Samuelson.
Lots of walking.
Yeah.
Lots of shuffling.
Shuffling. Mosey.
Mosey. A mosey.
Hashtag my chicken.
All right, so that's Mike Samuelson update. Ryan Palmer's in the studio.
I'm here. I am well rested. I played some golf at 6 a.m. yesterday morning. Played pretty terribly.
That does not sound resting.
Took a midday nap, and then did some drinking on a patio. Beautiful day in Portland. Nice little patio drinking day, and came home, and my wife decided to go out some more, and I went to bed. So, you know, new leaf.
Not for the wife, though. She likes to...
Hey, listen, she's got FOMO, I got JOMO. I'm not mad at that. You know, go out there and live.
Colin Smith's in the swamp.
Yeah. Swamp's really nice this week. Beautiful weather. Beach is looking great. I got to say, this is going to surprise you since you both know the kind of person I am, but tomorrow I will officially become a member of the Swamp Scott Yacht Club.
What? Oh no! Oh
right.
No! What is this? What does this entail?
I know you're thinking that a yacht club is a very fancy place, but the yacht club in Swampscott is something like a 100-year-old building that's on one of the beaches, and the second floor of it is a bar that is run by the volunteers of the yacht club. The yacht club costs $400 a year to be a member.
Okay,
and then beers are $2.
Oh, that sounds
so
good.
Best view in town. We were at the swings the other day with the little boy, and another parent turned us on to the yacht club. We figured, you know, I don't know anywhere else in the swamp to get a beer for $2. And, you know, we don't have a lot of, we're still trying to get our feet into how you make friends as a parent. So this is hopefully going to be our social scene and, you know, good view of the ocean and a beer for $2. I'll take it.
Yeah. So, listen, you drink 200 beers in a year and you've paid for your membership. You're good.
Yeah, exactly. I think I can do it.
Doesn't seem that hard.
Challenge accepted.
And you have to volunteer for 10 hours as part of the, you know, your membership.
Oh, that's nice though. That's good.
Does that mean serving $2 beers?
Exactly. One of the job I signed up for is bartender.
Is the bar like kind of nice? Cause if you go to like the curling club in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the same kind of thing, but beers are, I think, are actually free if you're a member. They have like a keg of Miller Lite, but it's free. But the bar is like it's, you know, folding tables and you're drinking out of Dixie cups.
Oh, I think it's a half step above that. You know, permanent tables and, you know, permanent, whatever, silverware or whatever. But there's no kitchen at the bar. I think the real attraction is that it really does have like the best view in the whole in Swampscott, the other two places in town that have are restaurants and have that type of view, the beers are like $10.
I have so many questions. Do you get a card? Are you like a card carrying member of the Swampscott Yacht Club?
And here's the other sneaky part is that the card allows you access to the building 24/7. So the guy I talked to about it was
like a late night walkabout.
No, but he works from home a lot. So he's like, yeah. And they said like, you get 24-hour access, but you know, and the bar is only open, whatever, you know, no bar hours. But he's like, I mean, when I'm working from home, I just go work from there. Like,
yeah,
there's a bunch of tables with the best view of the city. Why would I work from home? This is nicer. So,
okay. Next question. How can we get Tranmere Rovers or a little sponsorship of the Swampscott Yacht Club for Tranmere Rovers?
Oh, it'd be amazing.
And a little, amazing.
I got to rise through the ranks first. You got to give me some years to become the president of the Swampscott Yacht Club.
A little Mike Dean guest bartending at Swampscott Yacht Club.
I think you won't. I don't tell you anything. I won't tell you anything about it. You'll just be playing FIFA one day and scrolling through teams, and you'll be like, this this team in the lower divisions of Portugal is sponsored by Swampscott Yacht Club.
You're an ambitious man. I do not believe it's going to take you years to become president of the Swampscott Yacht Club. I think you're in there much sooner. Months. No, we'll see. Months.
I think it's like USSF. There's a lot of entrenched older people.
I'm so happy for you, but I'm also worried for you. I'm waiting for you to kind of develop this that like New England accent, but like upper echelon, like Gore Vidal accent, you know, where you like start using really big words and debating more and smoking a pipe.
Debating more. It's asking a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I'm more into an argument than a debate, really. don't need facts here. Yeah, I mean, I think that my hope is that this place allows me to find people who are also similarly trying to avoid those debates.
I like that.
That's the goal.
Man, congratulations. Big steps.
Swampscott Yacht Club. Thank you, everybody, for listening to this week's episode of the Swampscott Yacht Club Thread Podcast.
I'm Captain Smith.
I'll be your bartender.
Hopefully rising up the ranks to Commodore pretty soon.
Admiral? Admiral Smith. It's got a ring to it. Oh, man. It's going to be hard to transition into soccer now. Let's keep talking yachts. Do they actually have yachts?
I mean,
what's
there
the boat situation?
All right. So there's a really long pier that comes off.
Just kidding. We weren't done with Swampscott Yacht Club.
Sorry.
You're going to have to skip ahead to minute 37 to get to soccer. There's a really long pier that comes off the beach right where the yacht club is. And I mean, the building is actually called the Fish House. So the yacht club's on the second floor where the pier comes off where the fish house is. And then in the water out at the end of the pier, there are moorings where people like, you know, leave their boats.
Yep.
But most of those boats, I think maybe all of them would not be classified as yachts. They are like sailboats that you could fit between probably like the smallest are like two people on. And then the biggest you could probably fit a family on, but I'm not sure. Maybe a few of them you can like stay on the boat overnight size, not many of them.
Some skiffs. Yeah. We're talking skiffs.
One of the other volunteer jobs is taking people from the end of the pier out to their boat.
In a rowboat? Want it to
like
be a rowboat.
A little motor dinghy. A little
fishing motor. A little 2 horsepower. Yeah.
But what's the what's the application process?
If I get assigned that job, I do have a captain's hat that I picked up, I think, from Dan at Mike's bachelor party. And I've already found that.
I remember that hat.
So that I can wear that if I get assigned a boat bound duty at the yacht club. I'll be definitely rocking that thing.
Is there any application process? Do you have to like tie knots or anything? Or is there like
how's your sheep shank?
Yeah. Do you have to like know the directions? Leeward,
I think that's why I will not get assigned a duty on a ship or pier. I think I'm more capable in the indoors near a bar.
Yeah. You know your directions in the bar.
Yeah, exactly.
More of a landlubber.
Towards bar, away from bar. Yeah, I'm a landlubber for sure. For sure.
That would be bar back. That would be bar back.
Oh, that's so good. We did not get any emails this week, but Colin got a text from Kevin. What is that about?
Yeah, I told him to email. He did not listen to me, which is pretty bold of him. I'm Captain Smith over here, and you're not going to listen to me. I'm going to throw you overboard. But Kevin wanted us to talk about the Glassdoor reviews on U.S. Soccer Federation's website, or their page on Glassdoor. If you don't know what Glassdoor is, it's a website where employee can go on and rate their employer, basically, anonymously submit their salary, and also anonymously, talk about the culture of where they work. And it's so supposed to be so that, when you're considering a new job, you can figure out whether you'd like to work somewhere or not. So it seemed like there was a concerted effort by current U.S. soccer employees to go on Glassdoor and say what they really feel about U.S. soccer. And those feelings were not great, basically.
Yeah, on brand. We're not surprised by that.
Yeah, I mean, the situation here is that the U.S. Soccer Federation, Dan Flynn is the CEO. He's been the CEO since 2000. He's currently, you know, on his way out the door. They are looking for a successor to him as CEO. And basically, it looks like it'll probably be Jay Berhalter, who is that, head coach.
That name sounds familiar.
Yep. Head coach Greg Berhalter's brother. He's obviously been associated with the U.S. Soccer Federation for a long time. You know, I think the rank and file employees feel that the there's a toxic culture there, and it's because of a lot of these longtime employees and executives. And so they really want an outside hire to become the CEO.
Give us some, maybe Dan, I didn't read through a ton of these reviews, but give us some of your highlights from these.
Oh man. I don't remember. They were all just very much, you know, the type of things that you would hear out of probably any kind of office environment where the managers suck.
Yeah.
You know, like we try to tell our manager issues and they don't care. They don't listen.
Right.
They demand we work, you know, whatever, too many hours, whatever that is. There was something about like they actually are monitoring like the time that people come in and leave.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like, yeah, it's very like micromanaged. Yeah, but I mean, yeah, most of these people are probably not hourly. They're like salaried,
right?
Right, and like, but they're saying like, they're, you know, whatever.
They can't leave at four for a dentist appointment or whatever.
Yeah.
So it sounds, you know, kind of like a crappy place to work and a place that would rub you the wrong way pretty quickly. It also just kind of sounds like any place that anyone's unhappy, it's the same type of complaints. So it's a little bit hard for me to tell if it really, really sucks. I mean, I think likely most people feel like they're underpaid for the amount of work they do. That's another complaint. So I don't know. It just sounds
like a lot of disgruntled workers.
Yeah. The thing for me is that it's you know, it's a nonprofit, but it's a group. I think it's 200 full-time employees, which is pretty small.
Yeah.
So to have something like 20 of them leaving reviews, that's 10% that are highly unsatisfied, yeah, and enough that they're actively trying to like sabotage this hiring search. So that part, I think, convinces me a little bit that it really is kind of bad. It's not, I mean, if you get 20 bad reviews coming out of Facebook or something, right? Or Apple or any big,
right?
Out of a school district. Like, well, yeah, fine. But they employ 40,000 sure. people. So like, that's meaningless. But this is only 200 people. It seems like, and it's a nonprofit. Like, there's not a great reason that they should not be keeping their employees happy. I don't get it.
The reason is, if you take a job at U.S. Soccer, you probably are taking that job at U.S. Soccer not just because you want to work in a nonprofit sphere and you think that that is a good nonprofit to work at, to, you know, whatever, something, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's not like your other choice was a cancer research place or, you know, NPR or something like that. It's probably like you wanted to work in soccer. U.S. Soccer is in some sense your dream employer. Right. Mm-hmm. And you will stay there even though they have a bad culture. Right. Because there's no, like, it's very hard to, what is competing for you with U.S. Soccer? You're thinking like, maybe I could get a job if I live in Chicago, maybe I could get a job with the Fire. But like, other than that, like, I'm so happy to have a job in soccer,
right,
that it drives me nuts that U.S. Soccer, you know, the same way it kind of drives us nuts sometimes, but probably, you know, more for these people since it's their day to day, that U.S. Soccer is mismanaged or is a bad place to work, or that, you know, the people at the top remain at the top, or whatever the case is that their complaint is, right? So I think that that's why there's so many disgruntled people, is because there's not another competitive employer for them to leave to go to. Otherwise, the people would have been out the door, and then U.S. Soccer would be like, well, why can't we keep anyone longer than 6 months? But people will stay because they want to work for U.S. Soccer. They believe in that, you know, that organization, even if they don't believe in their bosses.
I would say, so the flip side of this argument is, as a teacher, we are really good at complaining, and we're really, really good at looking and being like, this is wrong. This is this process, this thing, the person that is leading the way, the admin is like shit, whatever. But then, you know, when it comes time to like actually affect change, we're not very good at that. Just speaking from experience here.
Yeah.
So we're really good at identifying the issues, but then really knowing what actually goes on behind the curtain, knowing and understanding what admin goes through and understanding what, you know, what might be going on at USSF, and truly understanding the process. I mean, maybe like we know that the process of world football, we know that the administration of world football is completely fucked up anyway. So it might not be the people that is leading the way in USSF. It's a larger issue that's endemic to the whole
the environment that they live
process
in.
Of football and world football. So, you know, maybe they're pointing the finger at the people that are at the top of the federation, but really we should be pointing the finger at, you know, the larger issue that we have in football. So, I mean, I get it. You're disgruntled and you're unhappy, but I think it's not an issue of, you know, the United States Soccer Federation. It's the issue of what's going on in the world as well.
I do. Yeah. I mean, I think that's a good point. I wonder as these guys kind of start to phase out, like Dan Flynn obviously was a contemporary of Chuck Glazer.
Yeah.
Blazer. Yeah. Chuck Blazer, who was the U.S. representative to FIFA or, you know, to CONCACAF.
Yeah. Loved his cats.
Loved his cats. Had his own New York apartment just for his cats. You know, obviously Sepp Blatter has been not involved directly, at least in soccer, for a while now. So Dan Flynn is like a contemporary of that whole thing. And even if Jay Berhalter...
He's really, you know, hand in glove with Galati, who right. obviously yeah. is now also moved on.
Right.
So, you know, like Berhalter maybe isn't as revolutionary as you'd want. And like Cordero isn't. Obviously, he was the right-hand man for Gulati. But, like, all those guys that were really part of that, like, the old-school FIFA setup, yeah. I wonder if it just will slowly change.
Yeah,
it takes time to affect change. Even if these guys aren't exciting.
It takes time.
But I don't know. We'll see.
I mean, I think that's the argument that these employees are trying to make, right, is that this is an opportunity for change. And by hiring maybe Berhalter, but, you know, certainly there's probably other worse candidates internally that whose names we don't even know. If you hire one of those guys who's been around forever, you're losing an opportunity to make that change.
Yeah.
I just imagine all of these meetings and this corporation run like an episode of The Office, and this glass door comes out and they're like, ah, board meeting, boardroom. Let's go. 5 minutes. Conference room.
All right, Kevin, thanks for the text message, but email us at soccerthread@gmail.com. It's a very, very low probability that we'll actually remember any of the text messages we get during the week, so not a good way yep. to get on the pod.
True.
Women's World Cup. Let's
do it.
Come on.
LFG.
The U.S. women beat favorites, France. Favorites for the tournament at one point. I think the U.S. were actually favored in this game slightly.
Yeah, they were favored.
But this is probably the biggest hurdle in the tournament.
France was like ranked number 4 in the world at the time of kickoff. So,
good team at yeah. home.
At home.
In Paris.
Yeah.
U.S. beat them 2-1, go up 2-0, and give one back. Played a lot of defense this game. But, you know, got the win. So, let's start with the lineup. Coming out of the locker room in the midfield, they play 4-3-3. Their midfield three was Ertz, Mewis, and Lavelle. I think a lot of people surprised not to see Lindsey Horan in there. Partially because Lindsey Horan, you could make the argument, is the best all-around midfielder in the world. Yeah. So why leave her out? But also because in the...
I'm going to still make that argument.
Who'd they play in the previous game? The round 16 game was...
Spain.
In the Spain game, Horan was
also
did not start,
out.
And everyone thought it was because she was one yellow card away from a yellow card suspension, and we wanted her for France, right? So she sat out. She played a few minutes against Spain, but then France comes around, and she's not in the lineup. So that is strange. Colin, how do you see this situation? Do you think that Horan deserves a spot? What's your read on it?
I mean, I know Palmer is a massive Lindsey Horan fan.
Yep.
I'm a big fan, but I don't think it's absolutely necessary that she starts every game. Personally, yes, I would have started her in front instead of Mewis. My preferred three of this three is Ertz, Horan, and Lavelle. But for me, the most, you know, Palmer, I think, thinks that Horan is the most important of those three. And then you can make arguments for of those four, and then you can make arguments for the other three. For me, the number one is Julie Ertz. I think that what she does, especially in this kind of game where we did not have 80% possession, we were on the back foot a lot. I think Julie Ertz is the most irreplaceable of those four. I think she was brilliant, especially in the second half.
She was.
She was great. And that's not to say Horan can't play or can't do the things that Julie Ertz does. It's just a mindset thing. Julie Ertz takes defending extremely seriously.
Start her at center back.
You need two center backs to play center back, right?
She started the first game of this tournament. No, she played center back. She started.
Yeah, I
at center
agree
back.
That you can play. You can play Julie Ertz at center back, but then you do not have a true center defensive midfielder who is screening the back four. I think you need that. I think that. We are not so good that you can just be like, all right, we can just play without a defensive midfielder.
Julie Ertz played center back. Sorry. I'm going to.
Yeah.
Julie Ertz played center back for
against Thailand.
No. She played center back against France in this game for probably maybe 40 minutes.
Most of the second
half. They dropped
half.
Back and put five in the back. They played five across the back. She was playing center back. She was winning balls. She was doing everything that you're saying that she can do. And then we ceded possession to them the entire game. And Julie Ertz did exactly what you said she was doing. She was winning balls. She was defending. She ran her freaking lungs out. She was incredible. But, I mean, if that's the game that we're going to play, then, you know, why not put her at center back and have our best midfielder on the pitch for a full 90 minutes.
So that's your solution, Palmer.
That's my solution.
Drop Sauerbrunn, probably.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I just think that's too attacking of a mentality to drop Sauerbrunn for Horan. You can't just be like, I mean, that's like an Argentina mentality. Let's get all our best players on the field. Oh, they all happen to be strikers? Well, we'll just play with five strikers. Well, that doesn't work. Like, you need, you can't just, like, I just think that's, it works in FIFA, the video game, but not in real life.
Yeah.
So the first goal, Megan Rapinoe, free kick off to the side, perfectly set up spot. You know, you see these balls often kind of whipped in, curling towards the back post. Maybe it'll catch the back post. Maybe it'll catch a header. You freeze the goalie. This gets lined up. That's exactly what I'm thinking happens here, right? And instead, she whips it in low. And pretty central, not even really near post, but just around the edge of the little wall. And just everyone is screened. Goalie doesn't see it. Doesn't get a touch from anyone, but straight in. So same kind of result as that back post curler that you see, but slightly different strategy used. And it's in. Rapinoe, 1-0.
Yep.
Palmer, good goal. Did she mean it like that? Were they hoping for a touch? Bad defending, bad goalkeeping. What was this?
This particular team on a set piece, and if you continue to watch this, every corner kick, almost every set piece goes near post. Every set piece goes near post. And this was set up. This is exactly what she meant. Was she expecting to score? Probably not.
Just putting it
but
in the
she
mixer.
Was trying to create some sort of chaos in the front of the net, and that's exactly what happened. It went in. Julie Ertz was there. She very easily could have got a touch, and that goal could have been hers, but it created chaos. It was a very direct, like, just simple, this ball's going to the near post. Could there have been a third person in the wall? I mean, hindsight is 20/20, and maybe that would have helped, but I don't think that this was shit defending. This was a good goal, and this is exactly how they drew it up. Create chaos at the front of the post. If you watch this team, every corner kick, every free kick goes to the near post, and it's people running across the goalkeeper's face. It's simple, but in the end it works. So this is a good goal for me.
If I'm Phil Neville watching this, or listening to this pod, and I know Phil Neville listens to
this
pod.
What's up, Phil? What's up, Phil? Hey.
He's been unhappy with our skewering him over his treatment of Cameroon. But
your privilege is shining.
But, yeah, I think instead of putting two in the wall there, actually, if you want to create an extra player, you take one of those players in the wall and sit them halfway in, you know, to basically cut out near post
screen. Yeah.
Yeah, to screen that. Yeah, so they're not marking anyone, and no matter what run Julie Ertz, who's always the near post runner, what run Julie Ertz makes, Ertz has to be behind this person. So this person can cut out the low ball and any kind of everything's got to go above their head, right?
You see that. So you see that defender on corner kicks all the time, kind of at the edge of the 6 yard box on the near post, just clearing out anything there. Yeah, that's a good point.
So you need that defender in this situation. The fact that I didn't have it made this easy pickings for Rapinoe, basically.
Yeah.
The second goal, speaking of near post runs, really nice interplay from Alex Morgan, who maybe we can get onto in a bit. Alex Morgan and Tobin Heath finally link up, play down the right hand side. Tobin Heath ends up playing it across the goal behind the near post run of who made that near post run? I don't remember now.
Mewis?
Probably Mewis.
I think it was Mewis.
Yeah, I think so.
And then it was
Mewis.
Rapinoe wide open at the back post. So that near post run brings the defender, right? Brings the goalkeeper, and then Rapinoe, not quite a tap in. It was a difficult finish, but she was wide open. She was under no pressure. The hard part was the finish, not the kind of physicality of being able to win the ball. 2-0, Rapinoe with two goals. Donald Trump rage tweeting. So finally a goal from open play, right? Yeah. Not a penalty. Rapinoe obviously had two penalties in the previous game against Spain, and then the free kick goal. So finally we get something from open play. Finally, Tobin Heath, it felt like, did not touch the ball almost
the
whole
first
game.
Half. She was almost absent.
Alex Morgan, you know, laboring around the field, doing a good job for what she can do, but it seems like not at her best. And finally, all these pieces come together. So, great goal.
I think so. The interesting thing about this goal for me is that, in the first half, any option that we had to counter was down Megan Rapinoe's
everything
side.
Was to the
everything left. Was to the left. Everything,
just like Spain, same as in the Spain game.
It was just Rapinoe, and I get that, right? But we also have Tobin Heath on the other side of the pitch. Like, she can get involved in the game, and when she does get involved in the game, she makes things happen, right? I think that, you know, we get stuck on the left side way too much, and we don't look to go on the right side. And when they can link up, we have options. And this was our only open field goal since when? Sweden, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, we tend to get stuck on that left side. We saw another chance created between a link up play with Alex Morgan and Tobin Heath, you know, and Crystal Dunn was offside, but again, it came from the right side. So it's just like left the entire game. And, you know, we finally get it to the right side where Tobin Heath can create some plays, and look what happens. So I don't know. Hopefully they can start figuring this out and even out the flanks of attack.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you. I think that we've been playing basically since Spain backwards. Rapinoe, I think, is a deadly finisher. You know, she takes the PKs, that's a perfect example, but she's like fearless in every opportunity. She wants the ball, that kind of thing. Tobin Heath obviously is a great dribbler and, you know, maybe gets criticized for a lack of end product. Why are we playing in such a way where the end product needs to come from Heath after we've worked the ball through Rapinoe's side? Shouldn't it be that we work the ball through Heath's side and the end product comes from Rapinoe?
Right.
Like in this goal. So, right. It just makes sense to me. And I agree with you completely that you'd hope that going forward, we can be a little more balanced.
There was that right-hand side though, Tobin Heath and Rose Lavelle, two very creative players. They just were not involved in this game. I mean, Tobin Heath, to be fair, in a couple of key moments was, but in terms of the flow, in terms of getting touches, I don't have the actual stats, but those two were, really not involved. Pretty frustrating. You know, because not only because you hope all of your attackers are getting involved, but also like it's really fun to watch those two play.
Yeah.
And we didn't get to see right. that.
This is why I turned on the TV. Yeah,
come like. On. I want to yeah. see France get embarrassed. It's Let's just, do this.
It's predictable yeah. too, right? So, you know, hopefully we can figure this out and kind of balance our play, but it's definitely tilted to the left side. And I mean, if that's going to be what it is, it's very easy to defend. England coming up, England is great at defending. They're going to be prepared. So we have to figure out a way to get the ball to some of our best playmakers, which is Lavelle and Tobin Heath. My other question is, why aren't we saying MRDG and get rid of and drop the CPDG? Because Megan Rapinoe is the god. She's incredible. Why aren't we doing this?
That like
the goddess,
the stand up yeah. arm spread, like taking your praise celebration oh, my is goodness. Just so yeah. good too.
It's great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Any celebration that pisses off Piers Morgan is a good celebration.
Yes, yes. The Megan Rapinoe's swagger is on 100,000 million.
So good.
So good.
The third goal that was not a goal. Alex Morgan plays it to Dunn, who it turns out is like half a toe offside. Back across to Heath, who finishes. But wait, called offside on the field, and then no VAR. The way that VAR's been implemented in this tournament, it seems like anything close will get reviewed. We didn't see it here. But Palmer, actually, I was a little surprised, very adamant, even in real time, you know, that was the right call, and there should not be VAR there.
Oh, I don't know if it was the right call, but... I mean, it looked like when they put it up on the screen and they drew their little red and blue line, it looked like red was just behind blue. So that was probably the right call. I'm assuming that what they're doing is, and it's strange because everything has been stopped and looked at and kind of hemmed and hawed over. But now in this game, it's not. So I think to your point last week, you said, you know, clear and undisputable evidence. Maybe they're doing it in the booth and they're just saying, you know, it's offside. It's a good call. Let's move on. We looked,
or at least it's not obvious.
We don't need you to look at it as the referee.
You didn't clearly the call was not clearly wrong. So we're not right, going to review it. Right. And if that's how they're using VAR now, great, but just not, has not been the way they've been doing it this tournament.
Yeah. I mean, if that's how they're going to use VAR, then what is the point of them stopping and having the center referee go and look at the call on the sideline, if that's how they're going to use it, right?
So France do get a goal late on, I forget exactly, around the 80th minute, I think.
Yeah.
Renard, my player, non-US player of the tournament at least, gets the header on a set piece. She's taller than everybody else on the field. We know she's good at using her head. Mewis drops off the line, keeps everyone on side. This is like the most predictable goal. And we kept giving up these free kicks.
Yeah.
Kept giving up set pieces.
Yeah. It felt like it was coming, didn't it?
Yeah.
And just like that. So, what are you going to do?
Well,
I mean, you got to say France absolutely deserved a goal there.
1,000%. Right? Oh, yeah.
By this point in the game, they were banging on the door and we were, you know, holding on.
I mean, that second goal came way against the run of play. I thought it was going to be 1-1 before it was going to be 2-0. So,
so I think the U.S. should give a little praise for two elements, which maybe are not, you know, really the reasons we watch soccer necessarily. Well, maybe one of them is the reason Colin watched soccer. Defensively, I mean, we played really well defensively. My concern really for this team, at least, has always been that the back four are probably not as good as you'd like them to be if you really want to try to win a tournament, right? We have Crystal Dunn playing out of position. Mm-hmm. She was... amazing one on one defending.
She was
she's a forward that plays defense like a forward. You know, basically, look, if you were playing forward, you'd try to beat that person to that ball. So just do that. But instead of kicking it at goal, kick it to the sideline, right? And that's how she plays it. She's amazing. Absolutely locked it down. The center defenders and then Ertz dropping in did a good job. This France did not create a ton of great opportunities, even though they had 60% of the ball. They had what felt like the run of play, but we played good defense. Like that's a valid way to play soccer.
Yeah. I wonder how Hope Solo feels about this because she's went and said that like, you know, Sweden were a bunch of cowards in the Olympics because they like battened down the hatches and, you know, Ellis is certainly parking the bus. She went to five in the back and, you know, she was ceding possession. She just allowed kind of waves of pressure for France to come at them. And you're right. They didn't create any really clear-cut opportunities.
It looked
and
mostly
any clear-cut opportunities were snuffed out by our defenders. And it wasn't like we had to have Neuer make huge saves.
It was always the set pieces that were most concerning. Yep. It was silly fouls that we were giving up.
Yeah. And I mean, I think if you think about the talent of our of the U.S. side right now, it doesn't make sense to try to win the possession battle and hold off a lead by trying to win the possession battle. Heath and Rapinoe running at players once they commit too many forward and we're counterattacking. I mean, especially if we had a fully healthy Alex Morgan, it would be even more dangerous. I mean, we don't have an Abby Wambach up there, right? It's not like we need to be, you know, holding possession and getting crosses in. We're so dangerous on the break. And that's what you saw from both the goal that's counted and the goal that didn't count.
We were almost up 3-0. Yeah.
Yeah. Was cutting through when they've, you know, put too many people forward. So, you know, I think that's a viable way to go and, you know, have Ertz win the ball, get it to, you know, Mewis and Lavelle, who can make the kind of creative pass that unlocks things and then go run at him, Heath and Rapinoe. I mean, there should be goals there.
Yep.
The other thing I think deserves some praise is the way that after their goal, the last, it was 5 or 7 minutes of extra time.
Oh, yeah.
Or injury time. We killed that off. Alex Morgan, again, like, didn't seem great, but man, she's smart. She knows how to kill a game off. She, you know, goes to the corner, gets the free kick, spends time pulling up her shin guards, doing all that stuff that if you're the opposing team makes you want to just throttle somebody, right? Like, it's
makes
so
you want to foul her again.
Yep.
It's so frustrating, but we killed this game off so well.
Yeah. It was a very professional way of kind of finishing the game and making sure that there were going to be no miracles in Amsterdam like there was for the Spurs. So I was watching this with Dan and I said, well, I've seen later goals scored. So
it happens. So the U.S. move on. We will play England next. Our road here was looking like it was going to be France and then England and then Germany. Germany lost. Let's talk about England first. Crushed Norway 3-0. Palmer, I think you got to see some of this.
Absolutely dominated Norway. Like, it just was not close. Norway, you know, their best player, Graham Hansen, did not have a good game. She was absolutely shut down. They did not create too many chances. There were a couple, you know, slivers of opportunities. But England, again, I said this in the preview to this tournament, England just do not give up goals. Defensively, they're very organized. They're very good in the back. Lucy Bronze is a beast. She is going to be something that's going to be hard to handle.
That's the right back that Neville, after the game,
said that was the best player in the world or something.
It's aggressive, Neville.
Loves a right back.
He loves
a
right back. But she's great. Ellen White has been absolutely on fire this tournament. Jill Scott got the first goal and is box to box, just fantastic player. This is going to be a tough game for the U.S. This is going to be a really tough game.
Can't wait. Going to be a good one. So that's England on Tuesday. Sweden beat Germany 2-1. Germany up 1-0 and it seemed like kind of coasting.
Yeah, shock.
But Swedes come back, get a goal on a mistake and a poacher's finish. Colin, did you see any of these highlights?
Yeah, I saw these highlights. I mean, the first one, I think, is the really like an un-German way to let Sweden back into this game. Still early in the game, but it's a center back who goes for a header with the striker, the number 9 for Sweden, and ball just goes over both their heads. And the second striker is just running onto it, then just completely clearing on goal and scores. And so, if you make the kind of mistakes like that, and I know Germany's supposed to be the second best team in the world, but they certainly deserve to go out in this round. They did not, they gave away that 1-0 lead. It wasn't the case that Sweden, outplayed them and beat them back, really.
So Sweden in their semifinal will play against the Netherlands, who beat Italy 2-0.
2-0.
Two set-piece goals. I feel like there's a theme in this World Cup.
Set pieces.
A little bit. Big deal.
I think the theme is set pieces and early goals. There's been goals that are given up in the first, 10 minutes of games.
Yeah.
That's the other thing, going back to the England U.S. kind of preview is both of these teams like to score early. So it should be interesting to see like what the first 15 minutes look like in this game. And if it's 0-0 in the first 15 minutes, there's no more game states. Like it's now, you know, it's kind of game on now. So it should be interesting to see how the U.S. handle that.
Yeah. I would also say that the four that are left, I mean, you said the set pieces have been important. The four that are left are all teams with a lot of size. There's no Japan. There's no team there that, you know, gets it done Spain through possession and, you know, passing. I think often at the, or Brazil, often at this stage, the USA has used size, especially in the Abby Wambach era, and to, you know, as kind of the trump card and use that to get out of bad situations. And that is not going to happen for the USA in the next two rounds. So if anything, I think the Dutch are more physical and bigger than the USA if we do run into them in the final. So it'll be interesting. We're going to have to win through, I think, counterattacking, speed, Tobin Heath, maybe double nutmeg, triple nutmeg action. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
So the USA-France game was kind of dubbed the de facto final, right? With the assumption, and true, whoever won that game is going to be the favorite. But this England game, is this the next final before the final?
Yeah. The semifinal, if you will. If
you will. It's like halfway. It's halfway a final. Semi.
Yeah, I mean, I think this, you know, it's a shame that the brackets were set up this way where England, France, and the U.S. all were on one side of the bracket because, you know, this quarterfinal against France felt like a final. It the atmosphere was like a final. The buildup to the game was like a final. And at the end of the day, it was a quarterfinal.
Yeah.
I think that England might be slightly better than France.
Wow.
So this is going to be a tough game. I don't think... You know, and my worry is kind of a trap game, right?
Yeah, everything is exactly what I was going
to
say.
Everything is built up to this France game. And now you have to turn around and you have to, you know, this wasn't your final. This was a quarterfinal. You have to go on and win two more games to lift this trophy.
Yeah.
So, you know, all this emotion built up to, you have to play two more. So,
yeah,
we got to switch on here.
I'm with you. I mean, and the last time we already went through one trap game, and it was against Spain, right?
Yeah.
Where you're looking ahead to the France game, and we played like crap.
Yep.
In that Spain game. So cannot play that way against England. We will lose.
Colin, do you expect Horan to start this one?
I will say that she does start this one. I think that Jill Ellis has mixed things up enough. Like, right, we haven't seen one consistent lineup. We obviously saw one lineup, and then we saw a big change out for the Chile game. But even since then, she's tweaked it a little bit. So I do expect that Horan will start as kind of, it seems like it's some kind of rotation kind of feel. I just hope that Ertz starts as well.
I think you'll see her come in for Lavelle. Lavelle was pretty quiet. If you have to choose one of those three to, you know, take a rest. Also, she could be a great impact sub. She's got that skill, that creativity that you might need to unlock. So I think Horan will come in for Lavelle in this one.
Yep.
Thing you're most worried about, England, Palmer?
Just being able to break them down defensively. It's going to be hard, especially, you know, we've not created a ton of chances in open play. So it's going to be hard to break them down. That's the one thing that I'm worried about. And being able to track Ellen White, who's just been fantastic. So,
you know who'd be great at that? Lindsey Horan. she loves tracking a runner. She will bust a gut. Who's coming out of the other side, Colin? Sweden, Netherlands?
I'll actually take the Dutch in this one. I just feel like the Swedish attack, not a lot of creativity there, a little bit more for the Dutch. But this is definitely the JV semifinal. So I'm not concerned either way.
Yeah, I think that's fair. So that's your Women's World Cup. On to the semifinals. We're not playing. Well, I think we played well in that game. We did not play flowing, attractive forward foot soccer, but you know, we move on.
We've not seen our best yet. We've not seen our best.
Switching over to the men's Gold Cup. So the last couple of weeks, it's been terrible timing for potting about the women. This week, it's terrible timing for the men. They play against Curaçao Sunday night. This is Sunday morning. A lot of you will listen to this Monday morning. You will know the result. Colin, will the U.S. men's national team have beaten Curaçao by the time most people are listening to this?
I'd say yes, but because I can't say no. But, you know, I don't feel good about saying yes. God,
if Mike was here, he'd say no.
I mean, Curaçao, really? Yes, we will beat Curaçao. Will it be pretty? I'm not sure. That's really the question. It's, you know, just like the Guyana game, just like the Trinidad game, this is a game where we can really only have a bad result. You can't have a good result.
Yeah. I mean, we had a good result against Trinidad. You know, we scored 6 goals. I feel like if we don't put up a lot of goals against this team, you know, let's start hitting the panic button again.
3-0 is not enough.
Yeah. Let's not do a Canada and lose 3-2. Shouts to Haiti.
Yeah, so yeah. Canada go up 2-0. Haiti come back. This is in one of the other quarterfinals. And Haiti come back and win. Haiti coming out of nowhere. Wyclef Jean, very happy about it on Twitter.
Jozy Altidore, also very happy.
Yeah. So Haiti's through. Canada with a very, I think, fun, young, attacking team. A lot of people thought they'd actually do better than this, especially you get drawn against Haiti. That's a team that, you know, that's tier 2 versus tier 3, maybe tier 3 versus tier 3. So it's a winnable game for Canada. They looked like they're in the driver's seat, couldn't pull it off. Fun to get kind of a minnow, though. Haiti coming through.
Yeah, Haiti, 4 wins from 4 in this tournament. They also had a come-from-behind win over Costa Rica. So they're, you know, maybe this cycle they're going to be you know, usually there's like one team, I would say, like from those kind of smaller Caribbean nations that is actually kind of good and like comes together, plays the right way or figures it out and presents a lot of problems for the Mexicos and Costa Ricas and us. So maybe it'd be Haiti. That'd be great. I mean, we certainly haven't seen a good team from Haiti in a long time. So I'm excited for them.
For winning, get the pleasure of playing against Mexico.
Yeah, exactly.
Mexico will be tired coming into the semifinal, though. Their quarterfinal last night, Costa Rica took them 120 minutes and then 6 rounds of penalties before Mexico was able to finally advance.
Costa Rica was probably the better team in this game. Ochoa had another massive night just doing Ochoa things.
Great hair,
great goalkeeping.
Brand.
But you know that Costa Rica probably feels hard done by this. Ochoa bailed out Mexico.
Ochoa had a great save in the second half of extra time to keep Mexico in this and then saved the 6th penalty. Amazing penalty save. This was a well-struck penalty, probably hitting side netting, and Ochoa guessed right but then stretches and gets there. Phenomenal save. And they're through. So Mexico survives, and we'll get Haiti. Jamaica and Panama on the other side of our quarterfinal bracket. So if we get through Curaçao, we'll be looking at who, Colin?
I'll say we play Panama again. I think that they're a little bit more experienced, and they'll be able to handle the Reggae Boys. But, you know, this one's a coin toss for me. I think both those teams are pretty evenly matched up. I would certainly not be surprised to see Jamaica.
So Costa Rica and Mexico, obviously both on the other side of the draw, play each other in the quarterfinal, the final before the final, you could argue.
Yes, absolutely.
Which, you know, means we've got Curaçao in the in the quarters, and then either Jamaica, Panama, both fine teams, but not tier one. So actually our road to the final now looks pretty straightforward, and we said getting to the final was going to be good enough in this tournament, and
that doesn't feel like it's good enough.
Very possible we get there without a single good performance or a performance that you come away being like, yeah, okay, Berhalter's got them doing something here, right?
You don't feel like the Trinidad and Tobago game was a good
second
performance?
Half. The second half of Trinidad was pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to go to the final, lose it to Mexico in the final, and be like, well, you know, that second half against Trinidad.
We'll always have 6-0 exactly. Trinidad.
Yeah, not quite enough for me. I mean, if we played a good first half against Mexico and like we dominated them but failed to score in the final,
yeah,
and then in the second half, okay,
we got to get there first, guys.
Whatever. Yeah, I wouldn't be so mad. Like if we show we're at Mexico's level, but we lose the game, that will be better than I would have anticipated going into this tournament.
Certainly. We are putting the cart before the horse here. We have to get to the final. We have Curacao tonight. Okay, let's focus on that.
That's a trap game.
Let's just be positive then. Any reason for optimism for this U.S. team instead of saying, "Look, we'll stumble into the final and be unexciting." Why might we actually be exciting? How do you, Palmer, you see us coming out of this tournament and being happy?
In all honesty, I think the only way that we come out of this tournament being happy is if we win this tournament. Because I think what we're going to do is if we get to the final, we're not going to play well in the final. If we were to lose it, and then it's just going to snowball into what the hell are we doing?
Yeah.
Why are we playing this way? If we can't compete with Mexico, like how are we going to compete with everybody else in Europe and, in South America? And so then the only way that we can walk out of this is if we're lifting a trophy by the end of this tournament. So,
Colin, what could make you happy?
I'm more positive than Palmer right now. Tyler Boyd has already made me happy.
Yeah, that's true.
He was just a name before. Now I think he has something to give us. So that's great. It doesn't make the whole tournament a success, but that individually makes me happy. Another thing that individually makes me happy is that in this tournament, Nick Lima has been charged with playing right back like a right back instead of playing right back like a center defensive mid.
Yeah.
So that makes me happy because I think that when Tyler Adams is healthy, he'll be taking the Michael Bradley role in this team, and rather than the Nick Lima role, which I think is, you know, a good thing personally. And then I think something that has not happened yet but could make me happy, and we saw in the last game an inkling of the possibility, is Josie Altidore. Josie Altidore scored an overhead kick goal. If Josie looks like Josie of whatever Gold Cups past, and is looking healthy and firing all cylinders for this World Cup qualifying, that will also make me happy. So obviously we got to see him in these knockout rounds, A, get on the field, Craig, but B, you know, look good. So I think that's a third thing that could potentially make me happy, even if we lose to Mexico or whatever, or even lose to Panama.
I would like to see one game, preferably against Mexico, where Weston McKennie and Christian Pulisic dominate the game. Own the midfield, play together, right? Not just like, oh, Pulisic ran past some guys. That was cool. He did them, like, you know, he had a highlight at midfield a couple games ago, whatever. That's great, but like, I want to see them forming a relationship. I want to see them doing it against a good team. That would make me happy. We'll see. Haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, with it.
I'm just protecting myself, guys, so.
I know.
Hold that heart close. MLS, Wayne Rooney. Mike Samuelson not here, but Mike Samuelson's own Wayne Rooney scoring from 78 yards.
All the way from Portugal.
The thing I like about this one too is it doesn't bounce in; it bounces like right on the line. So whatever yardage you're quoted on this, that's exactly how far he hit it.
Yeah. Turnover looks like he's sprung on the break, and instead of pushing the ball up the field, he notices that the goalie's way off his line.
Doesn't feel like running.
No. So just launches it. 78 yarder. Not bad. I wish it was 80. You know.
But yeah. Round it out.
78. So
can you guys? Can you kick a ball that far?
No.
Have you ever been able to kick a ball that far?
No.
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 That I don't think so.
It's pretty incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think it's most incredible is that the I mean, I'm sure there's many of these highlight reels, but the highlight reels of being like, who scored it better? Rooney 2014 versus Rooney 2017 versus Rooney 2019.
He loves it.
And that the last 5 years he has three, all really nice, not just like keepers up for a corner kind of whatever goals from halfway, but all like really well hit 50 plus yard goals.
Does chip him. That's what goes on.
Chip him. Does this suggest that his field awareness is so good that at all times he even knows where the opposing goalkeeper is?
I guess, yeah. I mean, there's not a. I mean, the Everton one is pretty obvious that Hart makes a mistake, but it's like a ball that, I mean, if you or I try to hit that first time, we're lucky to get it to the end line. It's probably going out for a throw, because it's like on bouncing and moving towards him quite quickly, right?
Oh yeah.
So you were shanking that for sure. And he hits it on a line into the goal. So that one I don't think is field awareness. This one and the 2014 one, yeah, are ones where you never really see him pick his head up in any kind of obvious way to look where the keeper is or line it up. He just like knows he's out and hits it.
Yeah.
It's crazy to me. I don't understand what that would be like to be a player that good. So it's hard for me to answer your question.
I think it's well known, not the biggest fan of Wayne Rooney. I mean, I think he's good, but I don't think he's like a world-class superstar. But this is very impressive to me. Very, very impressive to me. So good on you, Wayne Rooney, and gets the win 1-0, I think, right, in that game. So
yeah, needed it.
Take that winner. There it is. Other stuff in MLS, Minnesota United crushed Cincinnati 7-1. Palmer, are Minnesota good?
Is Cincinnati bad?
That's the answer. Yeah, that's the correct answer.
That's your answer.
That's the other side of this question.
Hey, remember when the Sounders played Cincinnati? Or not the Sounders. The Timbers played Cincinnati and couldn't score?
And lost.
Yeah. Yep. That was great.
Remember when our JV team played Montreal this week and lost? Yeah, that was good.
Minnesota kept celebrating even at 7 goals. Is that are they being good role models here, Colin?
Who do they think they are? Deion Sanders? Come on. So, yeah, I put that on the run order just to take some shots there.
I like it.
Of course, you know, it's we all know they would have stopped celebrating by 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. So can't really blame them.
San Jose beat LA Galaxy. San Jose's season, real turnaround.
Just wild.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah, I love it.
They take the same roster they had last year. They were bad. Same roster that at the beginning of this year.
They were terrible.
They were terrible. And all of a sudden, this is not in the standings, but like in terms of actually who you don't want to play right now, they're top, I don't know, 5 in the league.
Can't beat that man marking.
It's crazy and because it's like, there's nobody on this team that you're scared of.
Yeah.
Yes. But you're like, somehow, you're like, oh, Shea Salinas can't beat us. Oh, yeah. Shea Salinas can beat you. Yeah.
37-year-old Chris Wondolowski. I mean, this is crazy. I mean, so I guess the explanation is that this team was 30% worse and now they're 10% better.
Yeah.
With the managing, right? This is all coaching and managing and it's the same group of players.
And imagine this is year one of a 4-year project. So,
oh, baby, watch out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that there's a peak to this, right? Like now they've figured it out, but the opposition hasn't. In American football, there's this phenomena also where...
Yeah, this is a wildcat offense.
Exactly. It's like, if you... It's Georgia Tech. If you play... If every team you play throws the ball, you know, 50 times a game and runs the ball 30 times a game. And then you play Georgia Tech, and they run this weird option where they run the ball 85 times a game and throw it 5 times. You're like, we just have 1 week to prepare for this. And it's like a different sport altogether.
Right.
Like, everything we've been doing all year doesn't pertain to this game at all. It's like it doesn't apply. You have 1 week to prepare and they play the whole year like that. Of course you're overmatched. Like you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
But then over time you kind of build up how to play against that style. And so you'd think by year 4 of this project, most guys in MLS have played against San Jose. Most coaches have schemed against San Jose, so it's not such a shock to play against them.
There's more tape.
Yeah, there's more tape. Yeah,
you can see when somebody figures it out, you can copy that.
Yeah. Has there been has a team played them twice and lost twice? Has this happened yet?
I don't know. It's good trivia.
Yeah. I mean, like, if we probably are they able to make adjustments probably. Second time around seeing them and.
Yeah,
I don't know. We're to that point of the season where that should start happening. Right? Yeah, we'll see, get your second chance.
We'll see if they make it to the playoffs, and we'll see if they can beat teams more than once.
Yeah. Other things in MLS. Interesting little VAR situation in that Sounders game, Colin.
Yeah, it was kind of a weird one where attacker and the keeper go at a 50-50 ball and. You see this all the time, right? The keeper is the guy who gets, or you see it all the time in the middle of the field. The one player seems like he got fouled, so he stays down, even though, he's not that hurt,
yeah,
right? But it's the keeper. He stays down, and then the Sounders control the ball, and the guy just looks up and is like, oh, the keeper is still on the ground. I'm just going to shoot it. And he scores from 30 yards away because there's no
goalie.
Yeah. And then but the foul wasn't called on the field, and then they go back in VAR and say, okay, that was a foul. And it probably was, but pretty bold by the Sounders keeper to try that trick that works for every center midfielder and everybody else. I think if you're a keeper, even though VAR exists, probably just better to get back on your feet.
Yeah. Also in MLS VAR news, there's a no celebration VAR goal in TFC DCU.
Yeah, I put this one on the thread too. De Leon scores the first goal for TFC, and he's clearly onside, but all of DCU raise their hands like he's offside. And so he taps it in, but then doesn't really celebrate because he assumes, even though the flag stays down, he assumes that it's going to get VAR'd, and he doesn't know whether he'll be on or off. So he taps it in and then
jogs back.
One of his teammates kind of runs over to him, and he's like, nah, he's like looking over at the assistant ref and like kind of looking around. And then, eventually it's VAR'd, and okay, yeah, he was onside. Okay, it's fine. But it was just a really weird, feeling.
See,
the first time, and it was the first time I had felt that feeling of being like, oh,
I would,
this is weird.
I would celebrate like you just scored. That's that might change.
I know, right?
The way that they view the VAR, they'll be like, oh, well, he thinks that he was offside. So maybe
like when you hit the ball at the same time as somebody and it bounces out of bounds, you just pick it up and throw it in.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Just do that. But with goals, but it was an interesting one. I'm always on the lookout for these weirdo VAR situations that make me fear the future.
We love weird VAR. It wouldn't be a podcast if we don't talk about VAR.
Anything else in MLS?
That's all I got. Timbers game tonight.
Yeah.
Who are we playing tonight?
Dallas.
I'm
looking forward, hopefully, to seeing Pomichael, the young U.S. U-20, who is a nice little center midfielder. So hopefully they don't rest him for the long road trip because I'd like to see him.
Yeah, he's a commissioner's pick as an MLS All-Star this year.
Very good young talent. I think that's all I got, guys.
That's it for me.
Hi, Mike.
All right.
Hi, Mike. Miss you, Mike. Travel safe. More chickens.
All right, boys. Talk to you later. Welcome to Sunday Mornings in the Beaverton Podcast Studios.
One of my best outtakes ever.
Today we'll be discussing Venezuelan cucumbers.
And how they will save the planet. Vocal fry.
The new superfood.
Vocal fry.
It's amazing.
Ira Glass.
Coming up in a minute.
so good.
Vocal fry.
All right.
Vocal fry.